This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated, got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams, made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, the day after the off-year elections, and the Republicans were way off. This hour, going to be joined by Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO, National Director of the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, and Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. In case you do not know, one of the big stories is how thoroughly the Republicans were just thrashed. The governor's race, 16-point loss by Winsome Sears, gets hammered by Abigail Spanberger. She makes very inclusive remarks afterwards and talked about, if you didn't vote for me, I'm still going to fight for you. I thought that was typical and traditional and right. And then you have Mikey Sherrill really destroying Jack Cittarelli. Most of the polls were within 3 points, and that's not the way it turned out. And then you have Mondami winning by 6 or 7 in New York City. Mondami is the proud socialist mayor, Muslim mayor of New York City. And he was defiant in his remarks after he won. Defiant instead of contrite. Hey, listen, I know it was a tough race. I shocked everyone in the primary, but I think you're really going to like me. No, this is a little of the Tohran Mamdani. Message to Trump. Cut one.
And if there is any way to terrify a despot, it is by dismantling the very conditions that allowed him to accumulate power. This is not only how we stop Trump, it's how we stop the next one. So Donald Trump, since I know you're watching, I have 4 words for you. Turn the volume up.
So he's challenging him. Isn't that great? And by the way, you weren't running against Donald Trump. Do you think Cuomo was pro-Trump? He never even endorsed Sliwa. You should be saying, I'm going to bring the city together. One thing is clear. He was on the Democratic Party line, and he was on the Socialist Party line. He voted for himself on the Socialist Party line. He quoted socialists in his closing comments. So he's an in-your-face, life is about to change, and for most of us, it's for the worse. Let's bring in Jonathan Greenblatt. Jonathan joins us now. He's the National Director of the ADL. Jonathan, I'll tell you, if I'm a Jewish New Yorker, I'm worried today. Are you?
Yeah, look, Brian, first of all, it's great to be on the show, and I appreciate you putting a spotlight on this. I am concerned. And the fact of the matter is, hundreds of thousands of Jewish New Yorkers are alarmed, and that anxiety is well placed. I mean, one thing I would say, we have learned as Jews over the years to believe people when they tell you they're going to do something, like take them at their word. And so in an environment where anti-Semitism has skyrocketed, it's been a torrent of hate. Literally, the incidents are up all over the country, 1,000% in the last 9 years. Here in New York City, assaults are up 32% year over year. I hear every day from Jewish New Yorkers. And here's the thing. This man, this mayor-elect, if you will, has said things and committed to do things that may very well make this environment even more unsafe for Jewish New Yorkers. So we're going to judge him not by what he promises in a speech for once, but we are going to hold him accountable for what he does. And so we've launched a couple of things today I can talk about, Brian, but we are literally, I will make sure, as God is my witness, that every Jewish New Yorker knows that ADL has your back. And we will make sure with everything we've got, we hold this mayor accountable, by the way, like we would any other mayor. But no other mayor, Brian, in America has made the Jewish state a central plank in their political campaign. I mean, think about that, how ridiculous it is that he makes crazy claims that the IDF has laced the boot on your neck of the NYPD.
Those are his quotes and caught on tape, right?
Yeah. And like, look, let me be clear so everyone knows there is a deep relationship between the state of Israel and the United States of America. But the idea that the NYPD trains with the IDF is preposterous. It is a lie. But it's a conspiracy that he could throw out there to scare people, or saying that he's going to cut the Cornell University site here in New York City, not because of the craziness on our campuses, not because, Brian, their research is poor, or they don't have enough, the graduation rate is bad, or whatever, simply because they have a relationship with a Jewish Israeli institution. This is bonkers. And so today we announced that ADL has launched a tip line. You can find it at adl.org/NYC. So if New Yorkers experience anti-Semitism, where they work or where they worship or where they shop or where they socialize, tell us at ADL and we will make sure that the authorities follow up. And we've launched the Mamdani Monitor this morning, Brian. The Mamdani Monitor. We are going to hold this guy accountable. The people he appoints to office, the programs that he introduces, the policies that he implements, we will hold him accountable 24/7 for the next 4 years.
Well, I think that's great. But you know who doesn't? Joe Scarborough. We saw this exchange and our staff pulled it. Eric pulled it. So I want you to hear that. I want everyone at home to hear this exchange.
And you know, I love you and you're on all the time. And we ought, and always a fierce defender of yours. But you seem to be like blurring a lot of things together and then looking into that camera and say, call us. We're going to make sure that he doesn't support the.
No, I say to Jewish New Yorkers, call us if you feel unsafe. Okay. I say to Jewish New Yorkers, call us if you are harassed. And so let me clarify.
How about you calling his team, Mamdani's team? Or how about talking to people who may know him and you?
Let's see if that happens.
Like Reverend Al. Talk to Reverend Al. Maybe you guys can get together and have lunch and talk. Isn't that a more constructive thing to do?
Talk right here.
That would be great.
Reverend Al will do it. Come here, talk right
but
here.
But I won't be. Look, I know
that he's your friend. I don't know him too well. But that is the dumbest suggestion I ever heard. He's missing the point. It's not a matter of you being safe. It's the people of New York on 67th Street and 72nd Street. They don't know Reverend Al. And what would that do anyway?
I mean, look, at the end of the day, first of all, one thing it means, Brian, is I need to be on Fox and Friends more.
Absolutely.
We got to figure that out.
Yeah.
But no, what this really means, I mean, look, it is, I suppose, a nice idea. But the reality is, I'm not the one who got elected to office. I'm not the one who's responsible for the largest Jewish community on the planet Earth, like in the city with the most Jews. I mean, it's him. And so it's not for me on bended knee to go to him. It's for him to tell Jewish New Yorkers, again, however they choose to worship, if at all, whatever their political leanings, I don't know, he has got to make Jewish New Yorkers feel safe. And I am telling you, Brian, the data shows us right now that they are not safe. And it's not safe because they have particular feelings about the state of Israel. It's not safe because it's been open season for anti-Semites. And so when you, again, say things like when he was an assemblyman in Albany, Brian, he sponsored a bill, one of his only bills, called the Not on Our Dime Act, that would have prevented New Yorkers from donating to charities in Israel if he didn't like their
policy. And he's for the BDS movement, too.
Or the BDS movement, which he says is a nonviolent movement, and yet it causes violence. So, and again, the globalize the intifada phrase, I mean, it was like pulling teeth. And he still, as I sit here, what is today, the 6th? November 6th, he still has not said that globalizing intifada, which is a call for violence that invokes
so,
the slaughter.
So, Jonathan, look at this. Having said everything you said, and it's beyond dispute, I don't care if anyone at home thinks you're exaggerating, they're not paying attention. So they say Jewish New Yorkers. Who do they vote for? 67% of the Jewish community in New York City voted for Mondami. 33% voted for Cuomo. So
I haven't seen that.
No,
stat.
I'm sorry. Wait. 63% for Cuomo, 33% for Mondami. So Cuomo got some late surges there. Your reaction to that?
Look, the truth is that Mondami brought in an extraordinary turnout of young people. My guess is if you did the crosstabs on that, you'd find that a lot of people voting who were Jewish were young people. And the issues of affordability are front and center. Like, look, it is true. It is true that with inflation and other impacts, young people today are having a hard time. Like, I get that. And that's what he ran on. And that is what he talked about to most people. But look, at the ADL, again, we have learned the hard way that judge people based on what they do. And so it's interesting, Brian, and this sort of came up in the earlier interview, but not really, so we can talk about it here. Mamdani has demonstrated a pragmatism and iterated his views on free buses. He's iterated his views on law enforcement. He's iterated and evolved his views on some economics. But you know what's the one thing that where he has never evolved, never shown flexibility, never changed? It's things related to the Jewish state. Since he was in college and organized in a Students for Justice in Palestine chapter at Bowdoin, where SJP is the group that leads the harassment and the violative acts against Jews all over the country. He started their chapter at his undergraduate. Again, he was a rapper who rapped lovingly about the individuals who were indicted and arrested by the FBI for supporting Hamas, the Holy Land Foundation. Like this guy, the persistent colonel throughout his politics, in this short career, has been animus toward the Jewish state. Now, look, by the way, what's amazing and why our antenna is up, he has no animus toward the country of Uganda, where he is from, where it is a crime punishable by death to be gay or lesbian. He has no apparent problem with that.
Oh, what about Hamas? That's Hamas, too. Hamas got zero tolerance to homosexuality. He has not said Hamas is a terrorist network. So
not a word.
But here's what I think it could be good, is that I think that at least Stefanik and maybe Bruce Blakeman, if he runs, they're going to have a legitimate chance to counterbalance this radical socialist for the first time since Pataki was in office. Zeldin did well, but wasn't able to win, and just take out Hochul because of this. Who endorsed him, by the way? And this guy didn't endorse Hochul back. Barack Obama promises to be an advisor. I'll be here for you anytime you need him. So the Democratic Party's got to decide what their future is. Is it Mondami or is it a perceived moderate that won in Virginia?
Yeah, I got to tell you, like the politics right now are very complicated. I can't understand. Again, based on, I've worked in this game for a while. It is beyond me how the people give their endorsements and he doesn't reciprocate. But look, you know why he doesn't reciprocate? Because he's not a Democrat, Brian. He's a socialist. He is a member of the DSA. So I can't speak to what Governor Hochul was thinking, but it was deeply, deeply disappointing.
Yeah.
He would endorse this guy when she knows he is a clear and present danger to our community.
So just by the way, his remarks were so divisive yesterday. You would think after winning, he would come out and say, hey, guys, let's come together. I know some of you voted for Cuomo and we've talked later and we're friendly and I'll see what Curtis has to say about law enforcement. Yeah. And I can't wait to talk to Jessica Lynch about how she wants to. But instead, he was defiant. He was provocative. Yeah. He was challenging the president of the United States and anybody else. I'm proud, X, Y, and Z. One person who thought he missed the moment is Van Jones, obviously a Democrat, on CNN, Cut 10.
I think the Mamdani that we saw in the campaign trail, who was a lot more calm, who was a lot warmer, who was a lot more embracing, was not present in that speech. And I think that Mamdani is the one you need to hear from tonight. There are a lot of people trying to figure out, can I get on this train with him or not? Is he going to include me? Is he going, or is he going to be more of a class warrior, even in office? I think he missed a chance tonight to open up and bring more people into the tent.
And I think he's right.
I think he's right, too. Like, imagine if he had said yesterday, not some pablum, we're going to, you know, defeat the scourge of anti-Semitism when he's promoting anti-Semitic ideas. But imagine if he had simply said, I know many Jewish New Yorkers are concerned, and you had questions about my campaign. I'm going to reach out to you in the days ahead to ensure you that I will not do anything to make you feel unsafe. Like, that would have been a layup, Ryan. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he didn't do that. I mean, but listen, again.
Because he doesn't feel it. He doesn't feel
exactly.
It. And now when the next time there's an uproar in Columbia, do you think he's going to go down there at all? Do you think he's going to urge the NYPD to suppress it right away? Do you think about NYU? Absolutely not. It's going to leave it up to Trump to do that.
I mean, look, like, Columbia had 53 anti-Semitic incidents last year, more than any other university in the United States of America. It's located in the Upper West Side of New York, a very kind of Jewish and urban area. And yet I've been there many times, Brian. I've talked to the students. I've talked to the staff. They were scared because people were assaulted. Buildings were vandalized. You know, maintenance workers.
Oh, sure. We saw it.
The whole thing. Yeah. Now you have to wonder what's going to happen when that takes place again.
Jonathan, thanks so much. We'll be in touch. The CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, concerned like a lot of people. Not a lot in New York City, but around the country. And I tell you what, Democrats are nervous, too, about is this the direction of the Democratic Party? Because AOC mentored this guy, and Bernie Sanders was his spiritual leader. Fantastic. Thanks, Jonathan.
I always appreciate you, Brian. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Back at you. Listen, when we come back, we'll expand a little bit on the election coverage. Then we're going to bring in Rich Lowry, talk about Republicans got thrashed last night, where they go from here, what they should learn from here. And then at 45 after, we'll take some calls. So stay on board. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show on this Wednesday.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
What if your home security could stop a break-in before it even begins? That's not science fiction. That's Simply Safe. And right now, their early access Black Friday sale is changing how we think about protection. Traditional systems wait until someone's already breaking in. Simply Safe's Active Guard outdoor protection, powered by AI, detects threats before they reach your door. Real security agents jump in instantly, confronting intruders, letting them know they are on camera and the police are on their way. And if needed, setting off sirens and spotlights. It's proactive protection that stops crime before it happens. And here's the best part. No long-term contracts, no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. It's been named Best Home Security System by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years straight. And with a 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try completely risk-free. So, if home safety's been on your mind, this is your moment. Right now, my listeners can take advantage of their biggest sale of the year with this exclusive early access to Simply Safe's Black Friday sale. And save 60% on any new system by going to simplysafe.com/Brian. There will never be a better time to get real security for your home. Go to simplysafe.com/Brian. Stay protected and stay one step ahead with Simply Safe.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Shut down, shut down, shut down. That had a big effect on this election. We saw many Republicans start to go down as the weeks continued to go with the shutdown. Tomorrow, the legacy media is going to say it's Donald Trump. It's all his trouble. It's not. It was a shutdown. Number two, Republicans have to figure out how to get the vote out. I agree with Kellyanne. In Georgia today, you had two statewide elected officials, Republicans, defeated in a massive level. No one's looking at it. But the GOP has to figure out how to turn out races without Donald Trump on the ballot.
Right. And it's got to be on the midterms. But here's the difference between the off year and this year is that on the midterm elections, Trump will be everywhere. Believe me, he'll be everywhere, absolutely everywhere, because it'll be his last big election push. You know, and he'll help out. He'll help the Republican nominee, which is most likely J.D. Vance. But in case you're just waking up, didn't pay much attention, Republicans lost everywhere possible. I mean, there's really no bright spots except for on Long Island, where Bruce Blakeman won and everybody else, Saladino won. It's just Republicans. And a lot of that is what it related to what's happening in New York City. So many people are fed up with the city. They moved to Florida. Others that can't move have to work in New York City, move to Long Island. And that's why it's made Long Island and Westchester a little bit more Republican than ever. And upstate New York and maybe Connecticut, a lot of them avoiding New Jersey because of the high taxes. But now that's done because New York City is going to raise taxes, too, on those horrible millionaires. Remember, the mayor that you just elected here in New York City wants to make billionaires a thing of the past, doesn't think there should be any billionaires in America. So what are some of the other takeaways? Young people voted for Democrats. What are some others? Women voted for Democrats. And how do you feel? A lot of people say, well, women is good. You know, Republicans are going to be hurt with women because of the overturn of Roe v. Wade. Well, that wasn't the argument this time. What is the argument? The shutdown doesn't make it easy. Grocery prices is at top of almost everybody's list. I don't know what the president can do in 9 months, but he's got to make it clear the mission to get prices down. Certain prices are, and gas is down. Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety, built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is a guy who does embrace Marxist economics. He claims he's going to lower everyone's costs by having the government run grocery stores. And the only people that would think that would work are people who have never studied a lick of history. He's also somebody that after 9/11, he said how bad it was that his aunt was on a subway and got dirty looks. He never expressed the sympathy in that regard that for all the people that got murdered. He's also embraced George Soros style soft on crime policies. He hates the NYPD. If you look at his history, he is not going to stand up for law enforcement.
Is Governor Ron DeSantis. You know what he also said in his remarks yesterday? I'm not telling you to come to Florida because I think people in Florida are tired of New Yorkers showing up. But I think what's happened is people are sick of what's happening in New York City, so they move out to Long Island, and if they can move, they leave to Florida or Texas. And it's really changed the demographics and the voting patterns, and people wonder how New York got so left. It's because everybody else who wasn't left, left. Rich Lowry has his own theories. He's editor of Nash Review and joins us now. Rich, the Republicans have nothing to feel good about from yesterday.
Nothing. No bright spots. Bruce Blakeman held on to the Nassau County chief executive job, but that's not a headliner. So and they lost everywhere for every conceivable reason. Like you look at Virginia, you're like, okay, the top of the ticket just wasn't strong. Winsome Earl Sears didn't raise a lot of money, was an underwhelming candidate, so she gets wiped out by double digits. Jack Cittarelli in New Jersey runs a terrific campaign and is a great candidate with a great issue. Energy situation is just a disaster in New Jersey. He gets wiped out by double digits. So it happened everywhere. It was kind of a nationalized race. It's kind of the Brian, the dynamic we saw in the first term with Trump as well. You know, it's great when he's on the ballot, but as he pointed out last night, it's not so great when he's on the ballot because no one else can turn out his voters the way he does. And then also the opposition just hates and fears him so much, they turn out. So this is a real bad augur for the midterms next year.
Well, it's true. But, you know, it's pretty clear that Spanberger and Sherrill put Donald Trump on the ballot. They spend millions of dollars putting him in ads. They try to make Trump the candidate. Why? Not that Trump, I forget about his approval ratings. We know he won. We know how he won. But he was never going to win New Jersey and he's never going to win Virginia. Mm-hmm. And they took advantage of that.
Yeah, right. If you had asked me after the election last year. Will Republicans lose in Virginia and New Jersey this year? I would have said, yeah, that's just the way it works. You win the White House, then you lose those races, certainly if you're a Republican. So these weren't unexpected outcomes, nor was Mamdani in New York City, but the margins were notable. The level of the sweep just everywhere, up and down the ballot, these big state-level races, local races, everything. Mm. So it was a bit of a Democratic wave, and they got to feel better about themselves. In the midterms, I think, look pretty good for them next year. I'd guess they take the House. Now, who knows? You know, we got a lot of events that are going to happen until then. You know, what's going to happen with the redistricting war? You know, what's the Supreme Court say about the Voting Rights Act? But I think it's likely that Republicans win the House. But again, Brian, the Democrats win the House. But again, on that one, if you asked me last year, do you think Republicans will lose the House? They have a narrow majority and they just won the presidency. I would say, yeah, this is kind of how it happens.
But it didn't. And I remember when Glenn Youngkin won. And in the last time, it shocked the world 4 years ago. And they said, well, you know, that's when Republicans get back and Joe Biden proves to be a failed president. And his pandemic policies in Afghanistan will kill him. But the midterms went so well, almost nobody called for him not to run again. So it wasn't a disaster. Rescue plan that Larry Summers hated and the Inflation Reduction Act that didn't do anything but raise inflation. He never paid the price for that. They thought Youngkin was the canary in the coal mine, and it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, they overperformed in the midterm, so maybe Trump will pull off something like that next year. I just think if you have the choice, would you rather do well in off-year elections and midterm congressional elections or hold the White House? It's not even close. So if the price Republicans have to pay for Trump winning in 2024 is that they're not going to have a great election last year, you take that bargain every day of the week.
Here's what Mike Lawler said, because he's a New York congressman who wins in a battleground state all the time and thought about running for governor. Cut 17.
You have an avowed socialist engaged in Marxist theory talking about freezing the rent, banning private property ownership, seizing the means of production, defunding the police, shutting down prisons, legalizing prostitution, and raising taxes by $9 billion in the financial capital of the world. This is not going to go well in the suburbs of New York next year. It's not going to go well in swing districts and states in the midterms. And Democrats are really stuck, because if they disown him, they're going to be primaried from the left and they're going to lose.
I think Michael Lawler always puts it well. But I think there's going to be the other big story that's going to happen over the next year is the civil war between the so-called traditional liberals that Andrew Cuomo talked about, that he was, and Mamdani, the AOCs, the Bernie Sanders. And it's going to be fun to watch. But there's no way they can coexist. I see them coexisting. Do you?
I think they can. You know, they did last night, certainly. You run the communist in New York City, and he wins because it's New York City. And you run these relative moderates in Virginia and New Jersey, and they win there. So if you're a party, what you want to do, if you're the left or the right of a party, you want to push the party as far as you can plausibly in your direction without costing it, right? And that's what they did last night, right? They stretched the Overton window to the left in New York City, but they didn't try to do that in Virginia and in New Jersey. So it's possible they do that. The big question, Brian, though, I mean, there are a lot of primaries, and we'll see whether they nominate people who are too far left for their given areas. Certainly possible they can do that. But the big question is 28, right? Do you run a Spanberger type in 28, or do you run a Mamdani type in 28? And I'm not sure which they'll choose.
But Rich, here's an example. So they don't have to insult each other, but if they're going to run against each other for nominations and that's when you sit there and you go, you're a socialist and you're a capitalist. Do you like capitalism? Yes or no? And they're going to be debating. And I feel like, okay, you guys fight it out. Let me know who survives. Because it's very similar to the Tea Party, don't you think, in traditional Republicans?
Yeah. So, you know, the big thing about the Tea Party, great thing about the Tea Party is a great burst of energy and new talent in the party, some of which, you know, we're benefiting from to this day. Marco Rubio, right? He was a Tea Party baby, but also the Tea Party was overly enthusiastic and went too far right in some districts or states than was plausible. Delaware, you know, we just Republicans kicked away that seat forever because they nominated someone who just couldn't possibly win against Chris Coons. So that's always the danger in these situations. And maybe that'll happen to Democrats. Certainly I'd welcome that, but I don't think it's a guarantee.
So The Jack Cittarelli thing is a big mystery to me, because if you look at the breakdown, the Fox News did a poll and said, what do people of New Jersey care about in the aftermath? I guess it's the exit polls. 36% said taxes, number one. 32% said the economy. 16% said health care. If you compare the two candidates, they actually ran ads that Jack Cittarelli was going to raise taxes. Nothing wasn't anchored in anything, and he has no history of doing that. No Republican ever, out George H.W. Bush said, no, read my lips, no new taxes, did a compromise, and he paid the price by losing. Since that time, no Republican talks about raising taxes, but yet the people of New Jersey said the best chance to moderate taxes and energy is to elect Mikey Sherrill overwhelmingly. That's crazy.
Yeah, crazy. And also, when I saw that exit poll come on Fox's screen, 6 o'clock last night or whatever, I was encouraged. I thought, I didn't predict that he would win, but I thought Cittarelli had a real shot at it, and that seemed to be an indication, further indication. But I think also on that the economy issue, this is the thing that's kind of underappreciated, because no one's talking about the economy, right? It's all these cultural issues and foreign policy and ICE raids. You know, ICE is holding up pretty well. The deportation numbers aren't bad. It's about 50-50, which is kind of surprising given how controversial they are or how much attention there's been on them. It's the economy where President Trump is really sagging, and Democrats aren't really hitting that. People aren't paying much attention to it, but that's really unusual. That's something totally different in the Trump phenomenon, because that's been a strength of his all along, all the first term, that he doesn't win in 24 if he's not winning on inflation and the economy. And at the moment, he's not doing well on that. And that's another warning sign for next year.
Well, I mean, certain things are coming down and certain aren't. Grocery prices, according to people, 71% are most concerned about them. So that's something to attack. Now, one thing the president could say legitimately, economists would tell you, is the president's agenda is not in play yet. The big, beautiful bill passed in August or September, but it's not going to come into play till next year. So it's like, until I get on the field and put on the uniform, you can't judge me. But yet they're playing on somebody else's field right now. It's Joe Biden's field, and they're not even – they voted not to fund that field. Do you think the shutdown mattered?
I think it did in Virginia to some extent, because Northern Virginia, so many government workers. But I just – if you say the shutdown mattered, did it matter in New Jersey? Is that why there's a double-digit loss in New Jersey? So I think, again, it's just like it happened everywhere for all sorts of reasons, no matter what the candidate was. So I just think it was a bit of a Democratic wave. And again, not unexpected. This is a problem off your elections. It's always been a problem when you win the White House that you can have trouble turning your people out in these off years. This is not great Republican ground in the best circumstances of Virginia and in New Jersey. And this trend is more pronounced because the other side hates and fears Trump more than they do most Republican presidents. And Trump has a key to a turnout magic that doesn't apply to the rest of the party in a way that's unusual for a Republican president. So you put that all together and you get a bad night.
I'll tell you a couple of things. You know who looks good and kind of emerging too after Proposition 50 is Gavin Newsom. And he knows it. And he now can say, I answered Texas, whether you like it or not. Yeah. Here is cut 25.
Instead of agonizing over the state of our nation, we organized in an unprecedented way in a 90-day sprint. People from all over the United States of America contribute their voices and their support for this initiative. We stood tall and we stood firm in response to Donald Trump's recklessness.
So he feels good about his chances now, and he has a national stage, and he really feels like he's dueling it out as the president redistricts. What does Gavin Newsom look like today?
It looks good. You know, there's a great advantage in this sort of circumstances to define yourself as the leader of the opposition when the party is at sea and the image of the party is low and people want something, someone to rally around. So he won that ballot initiative, which isn't surprising. But, you know, at the beginning, there's a little, Arnold Schwarzenegger is opposing it and big Republican donors are opposing it. But it won handily. He made sure to get out on TV before midnight Eastern time. He's a talented guy, has a certain kind of charisma. Now, obviously, I don't agree with him on anything. I find him kind of stomach turning. But I'd say he's kind of a soft, very, very early Democratic front runner in 28, I'd say.
Yeah, he went online and there was no opposition. Now California is going to be more left wing like New York City. That's some of the results. So, Rich, if you're Donald Trump today and he says, Rich, come in here, I'm close the door behind you. What should I learn from this election that will help me in the midterms? What would you tell him?
I would say prices are a problem, sir, and reconsider the tariffs, and that would be the end of the meeting. I'd be out of the Oval Office. I would also say, you know, just be mindful that you have audiences besides faithful Republicans and kind of fence sitters that don't always like the way you think you say or conduct yourself. So kind of moderate that a little bit, because your approval rating is so important for the midterms. And that's another way to interpret Virginia and New Jersey, is that Earl Sears and Beau Citarelli basically ended up right where Trump's approval rating was in the states, in their states, you know, 43%, 44%. I'm not sure that advice would be welcome either. Otherwise, it would be kind of batten down the hatches and hope for the best, because I think it's going to be tough to hold the House.
Well, you know, the Senate's not a layup either, unless they come out with a message and the big, beautiful bill starts paying off. Rich Lowry, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Pick up the National Review,
Brian.
Get his columns, and he's the editor there. Listen, we come back. Your first chance to talk after the shellacking. It's not that it's that big of a deal, because it's off year, and these are three seats that were Democrats were supposed to win. However, the way in which they did it, and the way it also got an attorney general with all his negatives across the line to beat Jason Meares in Virginia, that is something I was not expecting. What about you? Your call's next.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
America is built on hard work and powered by American energy. Chevron has spent $44 billion with local businesses across all 50 states since 2022, fueling infrastructure and communities, all while strengthening local economies. Last year, Chevron increased U.S. production nearly 20%, powering communities and businesses from the heartlands to the coasts. We're helping to fuel America's energy advantage, building a brighter future right here at home. Visit chevron.com/America to discover more.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
New York will remain a city of immigrants, a city built by immigrants, powered by immigrants. And as of tonight, led by an immigrant. So hear me, President Trump, when I say this. To get to any of us, you will have to get through all of us.
Good luck. President is, it's on, basically. The president came back with him, and he said, I know you're watching now. Turn up the volume. That's the guy who really wants to unite the country. Am I correct? By the way, as we look at other races, there's a mini Mamdani race going on in Minneapolis. They have the sitting Democratic mayor there, and he's being run hard by a Somali who's been in the country a very short period of time. But there's a huge Somali population now in Minneapolis. They call him the Mamdani of the Midwest. There's no winner there yet. Charles is over in Oregon, and there's a tough mayor's race there. Charles, welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. First thing I want to say is my condolences, sir, that you now have a full-fledged communist running New York. And I expected the other ones to fall, but I really was surprised. Even I was hoping for Cuomo because, I mean, at least he's a normal, you know, a politician.
Yeah.
And I'm just shocked. And I really hope.
Well, tell me about your race. Bruce Harrell, the established candidate, I guess the mayor, against Katie Wilson. It looks like Harrell's going to win. Has he been declared a winner?
Not as far as I understand yet. He has not. I don't know. I'm holding out hope, but you know.
Well, Katie Wilson's a vowed socialist too.
Yes. So we'll see. I don't expect much from Oregon because it's always been heavily leftist leaning for a long time.
I hear you. Charles, yeah, don't come to New York. That's a lot of people. They expect 1 million people to leave now. 1 million. And I don't think he cares. Thanks so much, Charles. John, listening on the Fox News Radio app, world's best app, in California. Hey, John.
Good morning, Brian. I hope you're doing well. Thanks for taking my call. I grew up in Monmouth County, New Jersey, so I have a deep love for New Jersey. And haven't been in California since 1990. I can't explain. I mean, the high taxes, the gas prices here, $800 electric bills, and the same stuff is starting. You remember Phil Murphy said we're going to model New Jersey after California with all these problems, and these people keep on putting the same people in charge. I can't explain it. It's very sad out here in California. I mean, I knew Proposition 50 was going to approve by a big shot because the people, these are the same, this is the same state where they approved the tax increases on gas prices, and we're at $5 a gallon. I was in North Carolina. It's $2.30 a gallon in North Carolina.
Yeah, they don't want you driving gas-powered cars. They want to go green. Meanwhile, when they did their autopsy, what went wrong in 2024? They said we're so caught up on green energy, we smothered all the other issues, and that's not where the American people are at. Be responsible, but be practical. Thanks, John. I hear two people in left-wing states that aren't very happy but feel bad for me.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way from here, 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Now in control of our city, a avowed socialist who sounds like a communist, doesn't like billionaires, not too fond of Jews, doesn't like law enforcement, and he won by a lot. Michael LaRosa is standing by to talk about a big night for Democrats, and at the bottom of the hour, Congressman Chip Roy. So we see Proposition 50 was allowing California to redistrict. They say it's an answer to Texas. How does the Texas congressman feel about that, who's running for attorney general? We are hearing some positive things happening. And, of course, the nation can't wait for the Patriot Awards 2025 edition. It's going to be tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on Fox Nation. It's going to be great. Amongst the great guest roster of guests is going to be Erica Kirk, Jason Aldean, Brittany, of course, his wife will be there, and Melania Trump will get the Patriot Award, Patriot of the Year Award, and she deserves it. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Senators want to understand the administration's operations against narco drug traffickers. We are very happy to speak with them about that, and we will continue to do so. There's been 8 briefings on this topic, with the 9th coming tomorrow.
Here you go. And it's going to be a big one. It's tomorrow, meaning today. Closed door briefing for the Gang of 12. Secretary of State Marco Rubio briefs this select group on operations leading to the blow up of about 16 boats throughout the Caribbean. And we have 8 different battleships, destroyers, and aircraft carriers in the region.
Number two.
You've got so many people who depend on the government for either aid or a paycheck. And when that is stopped, they're going to blame the party in power. They're going to vote their pocketbook, even if they're ideologically feel a different way.
Robert Cahaly, he's a pollster. Shutdown. Signs of a thaw, perhaps, as we look at the pain from coast to coast caused by all work or no work and no pay. It's the Dems' quest for leverage, that seems to be their approach. It might have worked.
Number one.
It doesn't seem to matter much to voters who want to resist Donald Trump how they do it. If you're against him and you appear to be fighting him and you're showing it in every ostensible way, that is, I think, thought to be the path to success within the Democratic Party.
That is Brent Hume offering an analysis of a great night for Democrats. The results are in every way the Democrats have a reason to celebrate, but they laid the groundwork for what I think could be a brutal blue brawl. I'll explain. And the messages the GOP should take away. Number one, they got to find a way to get young people back. Under 30s voted heavily for Democrats. Number two, women. Women voted in these off-year elections. Why? They got to get to the bottom of that. And they do have to find it, they do have to figure out how they win without Donald Trump on the stump. So either you separate yourself and run separately like Glenn Youngkin did, Jack Cittarelli did the first time, but this time it allows people of New Jersey to say Cittarelli is endorsed by Trump, backed by Trump, so therefore he is Trump. It makes his opponent. Now, not that Donald Trump isn't the rightful president of the United States, but he's never going to win New Jersey, and he's never going to win Virginia, so probably never. So that's the problem. And in New York City, they ran against Trump too. So how does that go? Now, when Trump's actually running, it's easy. You know exactly what he's going to do. He's going to plead his cause and talk about his case, and he'll try to lift up all the other Republicans. In the midterms, he'll be out personally. You just know it. Joining us now is Democrat Michael LaRosa, former special assistant to President Biden. Michael, it must be great. The Democrats had a big night last night. Don't you agree?
Of course, they had a big night last night. They had a big night in reliably Democratic states, though. And I think we run a risk in over-interpreting these results or over-extrapolating. In fact, the places that I think were consequential for Democrats from a national perspective were places like in Pennsylvania, where we kept the three Democrats on the Supreme Court there. Having that majority is so important, especially when it comes to elections. And Luzerne County, the perennial swing district, a district that has become, used to be a Democratic stronghold. Trump won twice, pretty big, but their county council swept all by Democrats last night. That's good heading into next year. Those things are good. So is California, because you know what, Brian? While the California results weren't were expected, it's really going to be a motivator or not. We'll see in places like Maryland with Governor Moore and Governor Pritzker in Illinois, and now the new governor of Virginia, Abby Spanberger, because she has a trifecta. So will these three governors, you know, light a fire under their butt and try to do what Newsom is doing to really even up the score heading into next year? But those are the two consequential takeaways, in my view. New Jersey and Virginia, nobody will tell you this, Brian. Another Democrat won't tell you this, but it was low-hanging fruit. I mean, those were two states that even Kamala Harris won, and they have a million Democrats more than Republicans. So it's a good thing we won. But
so, yeah, I hear you, Michael. So Abigail Spanberger seems to be the type of candidate you get behind. She went out and she had a traditional post-game victorious press conference. But here's what she did. Cut 22.
I would like to thank my opponent for a hard-fought race. The Lieutenant Governor's story, her military service, and her years of service here in Virginia deserve our respect and our gratitude. And I ask that you join me in wishing her and her family well.
So, however, that's traditional, and that kind of brings people together. Who knows if it's going to stay that way, but at least it's an attempt. Here's Zohran Mamdani, cut two.
New York will remain a city of immigrants, a city built by immigrants, powered by immigrants. And as of tonight, led by an immigrant. Trump, when I say this, to get to any of us, you will have to get through all of us.
So among the people that have come out and said, Van Jones said missed opportunity, instead of saying, hey, especially because you run against Cuomo as a Democrat. Hey, traditional Democrats, I know you're disappointed. I want you to come aboard. Well, Abigail Spanberger, I cut it off a little short, but she went on to say, if you didn't vote for me, I'm still going to work for you. So was it a missed opportunity there, or can we expect that just to be the way he conducts business? Because it's not the way he ran.
Okay. Well, first of all, yeah, I did see the rest of Abby's speech, and it was incredible. It was very endearing how she talked about her family, how her body language, her body expressions. She just gave a great concession speech, and how much time she devoted to her opponent, I thought was so impressive and so graceful. You know, look, there's going to be a place for her, I think. Who knows what's going to happen over the course of 4 years. But as of now, she's setting herself up to be on that short list for like a VP in 4 years. Mamdani, look, he wasn't my choice. I don't believe he's not my style. He's not my ideology. I think he missed a huge opportunity. I think the people that have poked a finger in President Trump's eye have really found out the hard way that it's really unhelpful to them when it's either whether it's universities or corporations or other or governors of states. So that's just not the politics that I think the Democrats need to be following. And that's not the lesson that we should be learning.
So a couple of things. Do you think, so for example, AOC is thrilled with Mamdani. Bernie Sanders is thrilled with Mamdani. You know, those two get the biggest crowds out there. Do you think, besides for 28, we know that Democrats have hurt Democrats and Republicans go after Republicans. Remember, still Trump and DeSantis are still not the same as they were after that. But at one point, Democrats are going to be on the stage and they're going to be, we don't want to be known as a socialist party. And the AOCs of the world or whoever they're going to represent the Bernie Sanders of the world go, no, we should. That is our ticket. And there will be a blue war, civil war. Do you expect that?
I don't know. But what I can say is I can point to South Florida as an example. Miami-Dade County, a county that Democrats have, you know, was safe, blue, deep blue Democrat country. And slowly, right after 2016, you saw that dwindle. And then Hillary won it by a smaller margin than Obama. Joe Biden barely won it, which was shocking. And Kamala Harris lost it. That is an example of a place in our country that is terrified of socialism, right or wrong, the stigma attached to the Democratic Party. That is going to hurt in places that matter, in the places that Democrats need to win. Places like where I'm from, like Allentown, the Lehigh Valley. That's not going to fly next year. That's a district we need to win back power. It's just not going to fly. And the way Republicans get or Democrats are motivated to turn out against Donald Trump or to punish Donald Trump, Republicans are going to be motivated to turn out against the party of Mamdani and socialism.
So Jay Menares is out as attorney general. He was beat by Jay Jones with those horrific text messages when he talked about shooting his opponent and his family. Going 100 miles an hour and getting a speeding ticket and getting off light. So this is a guy that people were basically Abigail Spanberger was running from at the end. What does it tell you that he still won?
Yeah. You know, I thought a lot about it. First of all, I voted for Spanberger and I voted for Mayares. I couldn't do it. Vote for Jones. And Brian, what it tells me is that, look, if you look at Virginia last night, Spanberger outperformed Harris by 9 points. We flipped, I think, 13 seats they won, Democrats, at the state legislative level. It was a very big blue wave. And in blue waves, things like a Jay Jones can get across the finish line. I mean, that is a simple, non-complex, but real answer. That is sort of the reality of it. And by the way, I was reading the local newspapers in Virginia today. A lot of it had nothing to do with national message. A lot of it had to do with, you know, small, more localized measures that Youngkin vetoed, like a cannabis measure, abortion rights stuff, or the ability for localities to use sales tax to fund in school renovations. So a lot of it was very localized. And had little to do with the overall national Democratic message. But look, the bottom line is it was a blue wave in Virginia last night, but that says nothing about what's going to happen a year from now.
So Gavin Newsom feels that he's emboldened after passing Proposition 50, which allows him to redistrict. Is he the front runner right now?
No. I don't think so. I don't think there is a front runner right now for 2028. I mean, I'm a strong believer that these things are all cult of personality. Barack Obama, there would be no Trump without the cult of personality and celebrity and inexperience of Barack Obama. I just think that Newsom, he's doing everything right. He's doing everything right, but I don't know who the front runner is. I mean, 20 years ago in 2005, we did not know there would be a Barack Obama when we were shut out of all chambers of government. So maybe he's doing everything right. He's out front. The question is whether his potential rivals like a Wes Moore, like a Josh Shapiro, like a Pritzker are now going to say, hey, you know, this guy's making a lot of national waves and getting a lot of national good public attention, at least within Democratic circles. Maybe we ought to follow his lead and really push our state legislatures to get into this redistricting fight.
All right. Michael LaRosa, thanks so much. Big night for Democrats. Mike, we're honest. You said I won for Menares over Jay Jones. So
common sense. just need common sense. That's all.
I hear you. Thanks so much, Michael. Always appreciate you. 1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back and open up the phones. And then at the bottom of the hour, a firebrand himself, Congressman Chip Roy. How does he digest what happened yesterday? And we haven't even talked about the shutdown, an all-time record, and the pain for air travel, for so many other people to pay their bills is just off the charts. Brian Kilmeade.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This campaign was to contest the philosophies that are shaping the Democratic Party, the future of this city, and the future of this country.
So that is Andrew Cuomo. He lost. He lost by about 8-9 points. Curtis Lee had 7. I don't know if you could honestly say all those people would have voted for Cuomo. Maybe if they combined forces and said, I'm going to be joining Andrew Cuomo. If you can put me into office, he's going to put me in some law enforcement capacity. Maybe that would have done it. But by just saying dropping out, I'm not sure it would have. But Andrew Cuomo was not a good candidate. He was not strong. He was not clear. He acted like he was above it. He was allowed to be shocked in the primary. They had him up double digits. Then all of a sudden it was 4. And then it was a substantial loss. And it was instead we had a substantial win for Mamdani. The whole world's looking at this. Sandra, listening on WABC. Hey, Sandra.
Good morning, Brian. I woke up very sad today, just like everybody else. And as far as Jack Tittorelli goes, as you said, you couldn't find anything wrong. He had all the answers for everything because he truly, truly knows his stuff. So I'm not worried about Jack. The door closed, but others are going to open for him. Who knows? Maybe Donald Trump will scoop him up. I mean, I'm brokenhearted. And as far as New York goes, I'm there all the time. My sister lives there. My brother lives there. I'm frightened. I to have this young person running the state, the city. Brian, I'm concerned. I don't know.
Yeah, but you know who's not? AOC. Couldn't be happier. Listen to this. Cut 8.
What this night is starting and shaping up to represent is that Americans everywhere are not going to be scared. We will not be intimidated by an administration that is violating the rights and making life hard and unaffordable for every single American in this country. And we will send in a wave of Democrats that not bow to this administration, but stand up to this administration. And doing so in the interests of working families, in the interest to make life affordable, housing affordable.
And that's AOC. I can't listen to too much. Roy, listen to WVGA. Hey, Roy.
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. I think what the Republicans need to do is call the Democrats in and say, listen, okay, we'll talk to you about your health care concerns. But in order for us to pay for all that, we're going to have to come up with some funding. And what we've decided to do is eliminate the EPA, lock, stock, and barrel. Shut it down. There's the money to pay for your
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, Roy, I think it's under control now. I think the EPA is valuable. I think that's what keeps us from being a third world nation in many respects. The fact that we know when you build something, you should be responsible how you build it. But if it's overregulated, that's the issue. And I think Lee Zeldin, the right guy to be there, that's going to be not be fanatical climate change lunatic. I think that EPA is valuable. I mean, we could cut everywhere. I would like to cut the budget. He's already cut the budget himself. So I understand the frustration with it. Roy, it was a big win. In not only that, Georgia had a big win. You have Virginia with a substantial win. New York City got their Democratic Socialist, I guess their dream candidate, right here at 48th and 6th. We're going to have to digest that. We're going to see a administration that's really not going to care about the cops. It's going to be the first to criticize should there be a controversial incident. And we can honestly say we told you this. He told you what he thought of the cops. He told you what he thought about law enforcement. He said that the NYPD and the IDF were working together to suppress free speech in America. Listen, we'll get to your calls in about 15 minutes. But coming up next, Congressman Chip Roy. He's going to run for attorney general. But first, he's got to get back to work in the House. Are they going to end the shutdown this week? What is he hearing? We'll find out.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Instead of agonizing over the state of our nation, we organized in an unprecedented way in a 90-day sprint. People from all over the United States of America contributed their voices and their support for this initiative. We stood tall and we stood firm in response to Donald Trump's recklessness.
And they passed Proposition 50. They could give him 5 or 6 seats. They say it was an answer to Texas redistricting. Congressman Chip Roy knows all about it from Texas, who's running for attorney general. Congressman, welcome back. First off, your thoughts about Proposition 50. Does that answer Texas?
Well, look, Texas had a good night, just to be clear. Like, while we saw all the disaster unfolding in New York, while we saw the disaster unfolding in California with the five votes, there with the redistricting in California, Texas had a good night with our proposition, standing up a defense of parents, standing up a defense of not putting criminals on the streets with, bail reform and a host of other issues. So Texans are pretty solidified about where we need to head. We added 5 seats, obviously, in our redistricting. That's great. We maybe could have been more aggressive and gotten 2 or 3 more seats. And we may need to look at that, given how much California is now doing what they're doing, and other states are starting to think about, the Democrat states are thinking about, trying to pack their congressional districts with more Democrat seats. Look, we just got to recognize, with the election of Mamdani in New York, and I know that hits close to home for all the great Fox folks in New York City. Look, that is a bellwether of what's coming, and it's not good. And we've got to recognize that we've got a group of individuals in this world that are at war with Western civilization. Open borders, radical Marxists, Islamists who want to Islamify Texas and the rest of this country. The Muslim Brotherhood's tentacles are intertwined with CARE and a whole bunch of organizations in our country. We've got all these groups that are putting radical DAs in and letting criminals on our streets. These are all funded. We have Arabella. We've got Soros. We've got Bill Gates and all these foundations, taxpayer money, grant money, all going to these NGOs that are actually trying to take us out. So that's a lot, but that's happening, and we're seeing it unfold in real time in New York. And frankly, there was a lot of money. We were outspent in Virginia, outspent in New Jersey. So we've got to recognize what time it is. We can't just count on President Trump to save us. We've got to build an entire coalition after President Trump, building it around President Trump, to be able to win elections like this one.
I mean, look at this Mamdani. He comes off smiling all the time, but he wins and he comes off like a firebrand, like an angry reverend. Listen to some of this. Cut 4.
If tonight teaches us anything, it is that convention has held us back. We have bowed at the altar of caution, and we have paid a mighty price. Too many working people cannot recognize themselves in our party. And too many among us have turned to the right for answers to why they've been left behind. We will leave mediocrity in our past. No longer will we have to open a history book for proof that Democrats can dare to be great.
Yeah, and he called out Trump, and he says, "I know you're watching." That's the defiant tone that even Van Jones came out on CNN and said, not really the tone that it was a missed opportunity, not the tone you should really have.
Well, look, that's precisely who he is, and that is precisely what we're up against. And he's delivering a speech, and he's delivering rhetoric to mobilize his radical base, and they're eating it up. They believe in it. They want to carry that forward. And if we do not respond with a serious vision, with a serious agenda, how we're going to drive down healthcare prices, not Obamacare light, but a real vision for how you can afford healthcare and get access to healthcare in this country. Because right now, working class Americans can't. They're stuck. I know. I represent them. And they're getting beat up. They can't afford houses, partially because we allow big private equity and big corporations to buy up housing stock across the country. We've got to deliver on those things. Look, I think President Trump and Secretary Bessent, they're trying to lead. But Congress is always slow to get to the trough. And, we delivered on the big, beautiful bill, but that was one step. We got to be aggressive with an agenda. We ought to be passing. The House needs to get back in there and start passing bills and jam them down the throats of Senate Democrats. Let's get aggressive on things like health care reform. Let's pass H.R. 2 that we passed in the last Congress to codify securing the border. Let's stand up in defense of hardworking Americans so they can afford housing. and stop the corporate buyout of our farms and our lands and our ranches. Let's show that we stand with hardworking Americans who want to live free, and let's make that battle line clear instead of being the pastels that President Reagan used to talk about.
Yeah, so Congressman, you bring up a good point. People say, well, don't give in on Obamacare, but you do want to help people with health care. You know, you do want to say, it's a free market, but you got to have an equal chance to get a house. If BlackRock is buying everything and then makes us a country of renters, they're going to buy everybody out, give them a good price, going to take over neighborhoods, and then we all rent to them. They're never going to sell. So we could easily stop that. That was never Trump's idea.
No, that's right. Exactly. Look, President Trump has been the president for working class Americans. He's been out there fighting for them. We did it in the Big Beautiful Bill. We're trying to create economic growth after a disastrous Biden administration that decimated our ability to have a strong economy and drove up the price of goods and services with inflation. But now we've got to get busy inspiring a new group of Americans. Look, Charlie Kirk mobilized a group of young Americans on college campuses. Yes, because of the freedom that was emblazoned on the shirt that he was wearing on that fateful day and his belief in limited government and the Constitution and freedom, 100%. But there was another element to it, Brian, and it was that he was unafraid to talk about his faith, his belief in Jesus Christ, his willingness to speak about who we are as people and why it matters. And that spirit was mobilizing people because they want to believe. Mm-hmm. And Republicans like believe because President Trump stands up. And it's funny, I've heard Steve Bannon will say, well, President Trump's not very churchy or whatever. He kind of uses terms like that. But President Trump understands the spirit that is moving among young Americans who want to believe again in a country. And we've got to mobilize our army of believing Americans who want to live free, who want to be able to go to the doctor of their choice, who want to have safe streets, who want to have a country where, yes, immigrants can come here, but they assimilate. They don't try to take over our country. They don't want to see our country taken over by radical Islamists. Nobody does. Nobody wants to see what's happening in London or Paris happen here. So we've got to be aggressive in defending our homes and being able to provide affordability for our kids and our grandkids. And look, President Trump's got an agenda and Congress has got to get right around him. And look, let's not put too much into the fact that liberal Northern Virginia and liberal New Jersey and liberal New York have made some bad decisions. But let's get real about what we need to do by next November to have a landslide election in the midterms so we can back up President Trump.
Have you got a call from Mike Johnson to go back to Washington?
Well, we've been having ongoing conversations. Obviously, you just had a press conference on the steps of the Capitol. Some of my colleagues, I flew back last week. We've all been kind of cycling back. I'm happy to go back any day. We should go back and do our work. I think it's time for us to go back and start passing bills. And Democrats don't want to open up the government. Let's send them a bunch of bills and let them explain to the American people why they're not getting the job done. That's where I think we ought to be now, because Democrats are now playing with fire. They're heading into Thanksgiving. They're not going to work with us to open the government. Then they can own it. Let's just send them a whole bunch of bills, including an extended CR into next year. Good legislation. Let's ban stock trading among members of Congress. Let's pass health care freedom, H.R. 2, border security. Let's codify some more of President's great policies. There's a lot of things we could do and put Democrats on the defensive rather than us being on the defensive.
Congressman Chip Roy is running for Attorney General in Texas. Thanks so much, Congressman.
Thanks, Brian. God bless you.
Always great to talk to you. And coming up next, the great Pierce Morgan. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So the name of the book is Woke is Dead. And Pierce Morgan wrote the book. It's not, and I don't bring that up because he's here. I was going to talk about this anyway, even though it's the week that his book launched. But I paid for it. I downloaded your book.
Good. Well, you're not getting a free one.
Well, I know. I'm just thinking to myself, I'm probably not, because I know Pierce Morgan. But first of all, I know you're doing a bunch of media for it to get the word out for it. I just plays into what your book is about. Gold's Gym. A woman is upset that a trans man's in the locker room. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I saw the video. It's ridiculous.
Let's listen.
Did you tell me or not that women like to see?
I'm asking you a question.
Exactly. Get out of the way now. No. Now he knows how to be a man, right? Now he knows how to be a man. Stay out of the women's locker room. We don't want it. He needs to have his gym membership revoked for that.
But you know what? The woman got tossed out.
It's unbelievable.
So it can't be totally dead yet.
Right. So the wokists, as I call them, the wokies, they love to pride themselves on victimhood. But here you have an actual victim, a woman who resents a biological male being in her dressing room, quite understandably. And she's the one that gets thrown out for complaining about it, not the biological male who's invading women's spaces. And you don't have to be, by the way, it's not about being transphobic or anything like that. You can appreciate that trans people have a right to exist, that they have a right to fairness, equality, and safety, but not at the expense of women's rights.
I don't know if you watched my show today because you follow my career very closely.
I do, very assiduously, right, and it really is a benchmark of how not to do it.
Oh, that hurts my feelings. That didn't go the way I thought. So I was interviewing this professional women's soccer player who's an 11-year veteran of the league. And she just made a statement that I want to make sure that trans men don't play soccer. Can you imagine this? So she makes a statement. Two of her teammates invited to a wedding came out and said, we are an accepting city. How dare we're a team that accepts all rights and races.
They'd accept it, Brian, right to the point those two actually have their places taken by biological males. Let's be clear. You know, I interviewed a woman called Betty Yee, who's a candidate to be governor of California. This was like 2 weeks ago on my show.
I watched that.
Right. And she was advocating for gender-neutral Olympics. I said, what? Because it's going to LA in 2 years. I said, well, you had men and women competing together. Yes. She said, especially in track and field, because it's not such an advantage. I went, what?
She's clueless.
So you'd have Usain Bolt lining up against women sprinters, for example.
Right.
I mean, complete lunacy. No woman, I think apart from maybe one or two events, no woman would have any hope of winning any medal. That is a utopia for the wokest left.
And you point out, too, that Martina Navratilova, who's one of the first professional athletes, major professional athletes, to come out and say, I'm a lesbian, she said the same word you just said. Mm. And she got ripped, and she basically just faded away and said, I'm not going to bring this up anymore. She goes, I don't think that women's tennis should welcome in a trans man.
Of course not. Because look, you could be the number 500 male tennis player, maybe number 1,000 now, actually. I think Serena Williams admitted this. You know, the top 1,000 men in the world would beat Serena at her peak, right? That's not to denigrate women's sport. It's to protect women's sport from the obvious unfair advantage that male physiology gives men.
So with a couple of things. So in reading your book, you talk about how it affected your life.
Yeah.
And then you bring it to other things and did research. And you talk about how Anne Frank, she was labeled basically a white supremacist.
Yeah.
So this is a woman that hid from the Nazis and ended up dying.
I mean, just that sentence alone, just think about that for a moment. This is what the woke left did, even to someone like Anne Frank. You know, and it got to the stage where in the BLM period, for example, you would have heads of companies who would issue like groveling statements, right, about their support for BLM. But if they weren't quite groveling enough, they got fired, right? So we were just through this incredibly puritanical period where people were getting canceled left, right, and center. Thank God, I think post Donald Trump's re-election, the kind of woke ideology is now on the retreat, and people have worked out that it's really bad for society.
And you link it to Donald Trump. By the way, that story is one of the ones I picked out. And the story is that, you know, given the stake, this poetry, it's a poetry site. He comes out and he apologizes. He goes, it's too short, you're fired.
Yes. It wasn't groveling enough.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It never is, right? You can never bow to the woke mob because it's never enough.
So Trump actually won on this by using common sense, and maybe Dave Chappelle was one of the first to speak out in the comedy world. Comedians took it the hardest, and they were the first to break it. But how did it affect you? You came out against the royal Harry and Meghan.
I was doing a show called Good Morning Britain in Britain. It was the big morning show. The ratings were on fire. We trebled them in like 3-4 years. And the Oprah Winfrey interview came out, and I immediately knew that Meghan Markle was lying about a few things she was saying. For example, she said the Archbishop of Canterbury secretly married her and Harry in their back garden 3 days before Telefy's wedding. If that had been true, the Archbishop of Canterbury would be in jail. It's a criminal offence for him to have done that. So I knew this was nonsense. Then they made all these outrageous allegations of racism against the royal family. They've never produced any evidence. I didn't believe it at the time. I don't believe it now. She said she couldn't get any help for her mental health problems because the palace wouldn't let her. Her husband is literally the chairman of various mental health charities. It's like, what are you talking about? So for disbelieving Princess Pinocchio, as I called her, I got told you either have to apologize because the woke mob came for ITV, my network, bombarded all the executives with furious rants. 57,000 of them, who weren't viewers of the show, 57,000 of them complained to the television regulator Ofcom about me. Two things happened. I was told, apologize or you lose your job. I left. Second, 5 months later, the TV regulator rejects all 57,000 complaints. They said it would have been an insidious, chilling infringement of my free speech rights not to disbelieve Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. Well, of course it would. Right. We live in a democratic society. I don't have to believe a word you're saying, Brian Kilmeade. I rarely do.
Right.
Right. But that doesn't mean to say I get canceled for it.
Right. So are you, in what way do you give Trump credit for ending it or helping end it?
I just think at the core of Donald Trump is a core of common sense, right? He's just somebody that immediately said, if I get back into the White House, trans athletes will be banned from women's sport. He's right. You have to like Donald Trump to accept he's right about that. He's the same about a lot of issues on the woke
people
left.
People believe that, but they were afraid to say it. He's not afraid to say anything, as you know.
Correct. And it takes courage to do that.
So for a while, you said one thing, too. You admitted you were wrong about vaccines. You were very judgmental about people who did not want to take a vaccine. You didn't take into account maybe some of the after effects or that it was brand new and people had legitimate concerns.
Well, I'll be completely honest. What happened was the scientific advice at the time, I was covering this every day, was they said for quite a long time, as did all the experts, that if you took the vaccine, it would stop you transmitting the virus to other people. So therefore, there was a kind of moral public duty involved, where if you didn't take it, you could infect everybody and maybe kill old people and so on. So I took a very overly censorious view. I don't deny that for a moment. I've left my tweets up. I like a lot of people who delete them. I've left them there, and there are people who regularly retweet them. I've got no problem with being held to account for the stuff I tweeted at the time. It was intemperate. It was over the top. But it was based on scientific advice, which turned out to be completely wrong. The moment they said, actually, it makes no difference to transmission if you have the vaccine or not, in that moment, it becomes personal choice. And I've learned a hard lesson. Next time there's a big health pandemic like that, I would certainly be far more cynical and skeptical about specific scientific advice, because a lot of it turned out to be wrong.
So, Pierce, why do you think that it's – I know you said woke is dead. Do you think it's dead forever?
No, I don't think it's actually dead yet. It's an aspiration. I think the woke –
we're getting close.
I think the woke ideology has been killed off, but a lot of people haven't got the memo yet. So I think it's incumbent on all of us. I called it like whack-a-mole. You know, whack-a-mole, when things pop out and you whack them back. If it rears its ugly head, we collectively should just make sure we whack it straight back. Wokeism is the antidote to is the antithesis of a free democratic society. It is everything a free democratic society is not.
Are you the best talk show host in the world?
Yes.
Why are you hedging on that?
Well, because I got 4.3 million subscribers to my YouTube channel in 3 years. And as you know, Brian, you haven't.
Right. I think YouTube is a fad. It's going to fade away.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Black and white television's coming back.
Yeah.
But Pierce, overall, you believe that? And a lot of other people believe that. Mm. Are you worried about being too good and not showing any room for improvement?
No, because I always seek improvement. I just interviewed Cristiano Ronaldo. It's airing on my Uncensored channel now. And he's a guy that is never happy. He constantly wants to score more goals.
And you are like him.
I'm the Ronaldo of interviewers.
Woke is dead. His name is book. Pierce Morgan, thanks so much. The best that's ever lived, perhaps.
Your word's not mine, Brian, but I'm not denying it.
News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So Mandami's talking right now, the mayor-elect of New York City, and this is a much more contrite, encompassing, unifying speech than last night. I'll play some of it. It's just hard to believe that, you know, it was well delivered. He was actually passionate, but it's not the type of speech that's going to win over anybody else who wasn't already in your column. And for him to be successful, keep in mind, Eric Adams got 70% of the vote. This guy got 51. So there's a lot of people that did not want to vote for him. Coming up this hour, Julian Epstein, a matter of moments, Steve Hilton. He's running for to be the next governor of California. And the outgoing governor of California got a big win for himself yesterday. And keep in mind, the Patriot Awards will be out there with the show tomorrow, talking to some great guests. and we'll be at LIU, Long Island University, where I went, and that's where it's going to be. But we're going to be doing Fox and Friends from there. I'm going to be doing the radio show from there, and then all the festivities begin around 4:30, 5:30. I'll be signing books. 5:30, we're doing a Fox and Friends meet and greet, and then 7:38, we're going to start the show, and it starts streaming at 8 p.m. So before we get to Julian Epstein, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Senators want to understand the administration's operations against narco drug traffickers. We are very happy to speak with them about that, and we will continue to do so. There's been 8 briefings on this topic, with the 9th coming tomorrow.
Carolyn Leavitt yesterday. You getting what you want, gang of 12? Secretary of State Marco Rubio briefs the select group on our operations in Venezuela and through the Central and South America and through the Caribbean, because it's a necessary operation to clean out our hemisphere.
Number two.
You've got so many people who depend on the government for either aid or a paycheck. And when that is stopped, they're going to blame the party in power. They're going to vote their pocketbook, even if they're ideologically feel a different way.
Shutdown. Signs of a thaw, perhaps, as we look at the pain from coast to coast caused by all no work and no pay in the Dems' quest for leverage.
Number one.
It doesn't seem to matter too much to voters who want to resist Donald Trump how they do it. If you're against him and you appear to be fighting him and you're showing it in every ostensible way, that is, I think, thought to be the path to success within the Democratic Party.
Election results are in. In every way, the Dems have a reason to celebrate, but they laid the groundwork for an all-out blue brawl. We'll explain, and the messages the GOP should take away. And it's a lot. In case you do not know, there's really almost no bright spots outside what Nassau County's done. They basically elected Republicans all across Nassau County, which is this county of Long Island, which I think would be the 15th biggest state if it was on its own. And then you have a lot of people just moved out of the city because of the left-wing principles and the crime. And they just elected a guy in Zohran Mamdani that's more left-wing than anyone. In fact, he says he's a socialist, not even a Democrat. So good luck with that. That's how he voted on his line. He was on two lines, the Democratic line and the Democratic Socialist line. He goes, no, I'm checking the Socialist line. Okay, good with that. And in Virginia, Spanberger runs away with it. But she also gets the AG Jay Jones across. This is a despicable guy who seems to thumb his nose at the law. He still won. Oust Jason Menares. And the lieutenant governor position went to a Democrat, too. And then you look at what happened. The biggest surprise for me is New Jersey. Jack Cittarelli did not do well, lost by double digits after I thought he ran a very strong campaign. But not this time, not this year. Julian Epstein joins us now. Julian, welcome back. I think it's a big night for Democrats, right?
Yes and no. I think Democrats did well. They did well on turnout, but you expect that in off-year elections. The rule of thumb in elections now is the more people turn out, the better it is for Republicans. The lower the turnout, the better it is for Democrats. I think what you also saw was a hardening of the class divide in the United States. In Virginia and in New Jersey in particular, it was the reason the Democrats did so well is because college eds went harder for the Democrats than they did for Harris, and particularly white college-educated women. And so you see that divide showing up. It's a little bit more pronounced now than it was in the 2024 election. But I think the fundamentals of the American electorate have not changed that much. I think it's also worth saying that, and this is if I'm in the White House and I'm advising Trump, this is what I'm telling him, there is a lot of dissatisfaction out there. People think that the American dream is slipping away. And incumbency used to be an advantage. It's not clear to me incumbency is any longer an advantage. Anti-incumbency is really, really strong. If I'm Trump, what I'm thinking is I've got to put some points on the board on the economy. You know, the issue on tariffs, Brian, I think is that as important as a fight it is to level the playing field for working class, the tariff fight is inhibiting the economy's ability to thrive after the tax cuts, and people aren't really feeling the benefit of the One Big Beautiful Bill. And if I'm Trump, I'm trying to think how I can bring some of that to a conclusion as quickly as possible and let the economy
thrive.
It's really
not enacted yet, right? I mean, they're really waiting for this bill, the Biden budget to run out, and then they're going to put this stuff into place.
Well, that's true, but the economy would be, I think the economy would be baking in a lot more robustness if it weren't for the tariffs right now. I think people exaggerated the impact of the tariffs, but I still think it's holding things back. And, you know, Trump's doing a lot of things. We've never seen a president as active and as accomplishing as many things as he has accomplished in the first term. But it's also, there's so much activity, it's hard to keep up. You feel like you're drinking from a fire hose. And I think, you know, the Republicans have lost some of the focus on the economy. I think DOGE also was a great issue because it exposed, I think, so much sort of corruptness and waste in the Democratic bureaucracy that has been built up over decades, and sort of the whole NGO industrial complex. And I think that was making a major political and cultural point to voters. It was an 80-20 issue. And I think sort of when Musk left, there was a little bit of focus that was lost on that. And I think there's so much activity now that it's hard. It doesn't register with a lot of people.
But Julian, you talk very practically, and they say that one of the number one issues is the grocery prices. 71% of the people on the voter analysis was the prices at the grocery store. Now, look, Trump's been in there 9 months. I don't know if they expect. I know he said he's going to focus on that right away, but I don't know what he possibly could do in 9 months to try to get inflation under control. It's now at 3%. He needs it at 2%. But at one point, it was at 9%.
Right. Right. It was 20% under Biden over the 5 years, and an average of 5% a year. So, yeah, look, I mean, inflation is much better, and grocery prices are way down, and gas prices are way down. I think people feel a lot of economic anxiety still. Whether that's reasonable or not is a debatable question. I think people don't like 3% inflation. It would be good to get us down to 2, as you point out. But there is a lot of anxiety out there, and a lot of it may be held over from the Biden years. I mean, it's funny to hear Democrats talking about affordability when they're the people that have created the affordability crisis with a 20% inflation over 4 years, as we're talking about. But I still think people are feeling that anxiety out there. And if Trump were to focus, I think, more on the affordability, or particularly lowering prices, but equally important, I mean, Democrats have this idea that the way you deal with the affordability crisis is to get free stuff from government. And that's not dealing with the affordability crisis. The way you deal with affordability, Brian, as an economist will tell you, is you increase the supply. You increase the supply of housing. You don't price control. Price control is going to reduce the supply of housing and make the problem worse. And what I think the One Big Beautiful Bill did was to juice the economy more than it otherwise would have been. And the way you increase supply of everything is through more business investment. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a strong case for Republicans to be making that we have the right model to build the economy. I'd like to see the Democrats doing that. I'd like to see the Democrats trying to go through a more deregulatory approach, trying to sort of juice the economy.
But Ezra Klein tried that. And you talk about that. Ezra Klein talks about that, another Democrat, and he gets ripped. And I'm sure people are going after you, too, for saying that some of the problems are self-inflicted. And now Democrats are going to say, we just had a great night by being ourselves. So you're going to learn from Spanberger, who credited her opponent, Winsome Sears. You're going to learn from the socialist who came out and ripped Trump and went after Trump on his concession speech. What are you going to study? What are you going to take from that?
Oh, I think look, you can say Trump's numbers have been going down, and they have, but the Democrats' numbers are far lower. I mean, Democratic approval as a brand is still lower than Trump in just about every poll. And if you look at the cultural issues of Democrats, crime, immigration, race, gender, so on, they are behind Republicans in double digits. So the cultural revolution is not popular. It may be popular in New York City. It's not popular anywhere else. And the economic program, to the point that I'm just talking about, nobody has any idea what the Democrats' economic program was. So last night, I think to some extent, was a protest vote of the status quo. But I don't think the downwardly mobile podcast class in New York City, the mostly college-educated whites, have any idea about whether one Mandami can deliver any of the stuff he's talking about, the universal child care and free buses and rent freezes, whether that will do anything. I think that he either cannot deliver that, any of that. And if he can, certainly in the case of housing, it'll make things much worse.
So I want you to hear what Matt
drawing up supply.
That's a good point. I also want you to hear what Matt Towery said. He was on last night. He said, well, you know, why did Republicans get beat everywhere, especially in New Jersey, where they were supposed to finish strong and maybe Chitterelli would have won? He got trounced. Cut 29.
Shut down, shut down, shut down. That had a big effect on this election. We saw many Republicans start to go down as the weeks continued to go with the shutdown. Tomorrow, the legacy media is going to say it's Donald Trump. It's all his trouble. It's not. It was a shutdown. Number two, Republicans have to figure out how to get the vote out. I agree with Kellyanne. In Georgia today, Georgia, you had two statewide elected officials, Republicans, defeated in a massive level. No one's looking at it, but the GOP has to figure out how to turn out races without Donald Trump on the ballot.
What do you think?
Well, I think all of that is true. He's a very good pollster. I think, one, Trump being on the ballot is great for turnout. I think, two, we know that turnout in off-year elections advantages Democrats, not Republicans. I think, three, we certainly know that the shutdown hurt in Virginia. 60% of Virginia families saying they're affected by the shutdown. I'm not sure that that's true nationally. I think what is important for both Democrats and Republicans is to have more credibility in the economic issue. I think right now Republicans lead in most places in terms of who do you trust more in the economy. But I think Trump has got to focus on that like a laser. And again, I think the quicker they can get past the trade negotiations and into sort of deregulating the economy, letting the tax reform really have its full effect and talking about it. I think that's where the R's need to be. Where the D's need to be is got to get away from the affordability issue answered by more big government. Big government is not popular.
Yeah, you like the topic.
Big government.
They
like the topic, but they're the people. It's the party that created the problem, and they don't have a solution that's going to work on a national basis. People don't want a bigger welfare state. It just doesn't work as an economic matter, and most working class people in particular find it insulting to say we're going to give you handouts. What they want is an economy that grows and works for everyone. And that requires increasing, for the most part, increasing our productivity, increasing our supply side. And you do that through, you know, tools that we know, but they're alien to a lot of Democrats.
All right.
And that's where the switch the Democrats need to make.
Julian Epstein, thanks so much. The aftermath of an off-year election, Democrats have a lot of reason to feel very, very good, but they should be cautious. But it's going to be a big year. I expect Trump to be out on the stump a lot next year, because his whole legacy is on the line. The whole 4 years are on the line. Julian, thank you.
Yep.
Bottom of the hour, Steve Hilton joins us, tells his chances of winning in California. Don't move.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's time for Republicans to do what they have to do, and that's terminate the filibuster. It's the only way you can do it. And if you don't terminate the filibuster, you'll be in bad shape. We won't pass any legislation. There'll be no legislation passed for 3 1/4. We have 3 1/4 years, so that's a long time.
So that's the President of the United States. He's been saying that for about a week. Get rid of the filibuster. That means a simple majority. Anything that was passed, simple majority. If you can get Rand Paul and some other heretics in place, would just pass on a simple majority. The only thing I think is bad is it would ruin the Senate institution, the need to win over other people, to possibly put together legislation that could get more than 50 votes. I mean, look, they had some gun reform Republicans joined in on. There was some infrastructure plan the Republicans joined in on. They would actually have to structure legislation to get the other side on board, if indeed is possible. But just keep in mind, if Republicans did that, it would be to pass legislation laws. The Democrats would change the complexion of the Supreme Court. The size of the Supreme Court, they decide, okay, let's make them retire at 70. Think about that. Think about what else they would do. They always made it pretty clear they want to add two states, Puerto Rico and D.C. D.C. was never meant to be a state. It doesn't matter. That's exactly what they would do. Why? Two more senators in each place, congressmen in each place. That's what they would want to do. And when President Trump is done, he'd have more things accomplished, but he might lead people coming in. They're going to undo everything that he did. George in New Jersey, you're listening on WABC. Hey, George.
Well, hi, Brian. Great show. These elections are showing us that the 1965 Immigration Act has got to go. I mean, Mamdani got elected by 70% of people who were foreign-born, and there's a lot more in New York City who weren't registered because they weren't citizens yet. So 65 Immigration Act has got to go. Let's not fool ourselves with all the phony blaming and everything. Cuomo, he's the one who ran Republicans out of New York State by letting the prisoners out of jail, closing jails, no bail. And unfortunately, New York is going to be like California now. And listen, Trump is going to do as much as he can on the federal level, but this is not good, guy.
I know. I hear you. Sean on WABC in Pearl River. Sean.
Oh, hi. Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm up here in Rockland County, and I could look down at New York City. It's a sad day for New York City.
It is.
When you get a guy like this elected mayor. But let's face it, a million people share his mentality, and millions more share his mentality that he has. We're fooling ourselves that everybody loves each other. 9/11, people say the country was together. Baloney. The country was in shock. There might have been 10 people in the country who weren't in shock. One was Steve from Manhattan, and he was a supporter of Pat Buchanan, and those guys turned out to be right. That's the way it turned out, Brian.
So a couple of things. Number one, if they say about a million people will leave New York, I'll have to see. I mean, there is so good news on Long Island where Bruce Blakeman and people like Saladino were successful. A lot of Republicans moved out there, but I think that the city has become even redder and redder. Excuse me, bluer and bluer. It's to the point where, I mean, you have no shot if you're a Republican, and if you're a traditional Democrat, you're like Cuomo. You're going to lose by 8-10 points. What you need to do is what George Will said. Let every 10 years, you let a socialist get elected, you let them fail, and then you, pick the bones, and you basically say, see what happens. My worry is that he will thrive under when everyone leaves, implement a lot of his programs the best he can, and he doesn't care how successful he is. He's just going to look to build a coalition.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think that's a great deal of what this is all about, because it doesn't seem to matter too much to voters who want to resist Donald Trump how they do it. If you're against him and you appear to be fighting him and you're showing it in every ostensible way, that is I think thought to be the path to success within the Democratic Party, and I think that's exactly what Gavin Newsom has in mind.
Brid Hume last night offering his analysis after the big win in five major seats of power in the off-year elections. Let's bring in Steve Hilton. Has to have known that Gavin Newsom was about to win his Proposition 50, allows him to redistrict and pick up maybe five more House seats in the next election, midterm election. Says it was an answer to what Texas was doing. Well, I got news for you. The president's also doing it in Indiana. Looks like he's going to do it in North Carolina. Looks like he's going to do it in Missouri as well as Ohio, and they could be trying to do it in Florida. Joining us now is Steve Hilton, Republican California gubernatorial candidate. Steve, not a good night for your party.
No, it's disappointing. I mean, it's disappointing for all the great candidates who ran so hard and didn't succeed, Jack and so on, in New Jersey, Virginia. That's all true. And it's true, of course, that there are now millions of people in California who are going to be, if this unfolds the way that Gavin Newsom wants, and there's a question mark over that, but I'll get to that in a second, who would be disenfranchised by this. Millions of Californians who now won't have the kind of representation they would have in Congress if we had a fair system. But I don't think it's over yet. Today I'll be announcing that my federal lawsuit that I filed right at the beginning of this process, because what Gavin Newsom did, just to be clear, remains totally unconstitutional, what he did in California. And so there's going to be legal challenges. Mine, I'm now joining forces with the California Republican Party and members of the state legislature to mount a legal challenge to this on the grounds that it's unconstitutional. So we'll see how that unfolds. But actually, broader than that, I think that this is actually going to prompt a real reaction in the other direction in California, because you see now, this is what you get from this corrupt Democrat machine this political machine that's been in power.
But they say they're answering Texas. So long. What do you say to that, Steve? They say they're answering what Texas is doing.
Well, it's over now. The voters have spoken. I don't think it was anything to do with that, or anything to do even with the issue of redistricting, as Britt was just alluding to in the clip you just played. This was effectively some kind of a national political referendum, whether that's on the shutdown or something else. It wasn't really about anything that was happening here in California, certainly not about the issues that people are so fed up with here in California, that the things you and I talk about often, the gas prices and the taxes and the crime, all those things, totally ignored by Gavin Newsom because he's only focused on his own personal political ambition. He definitely got what he wanted last night. No question about that.
And he was pretty happy.
I think in the long...
Yo, listen to this.
Yeah,
cut 26.
I don't know if he's... I think he may be celebrating too soon, but let's listen.
Okay.
We need to see other states with the remarkable leaders that have been doing remarkable things meet this moment head on as well, to recognize what we're up against in 2026. And let me make this crystal clear. We can de facto end Donald Trump's presidency as we know it the minute Speaker Jeffries gets sworn in as Speaker of the House of Representatives.
You just motivate a lot of Republicans, but what's your analysis of his?
Well, you know, that I think that's what people are sick of, Brian, honestly. It's just this endless focus on politics instead of policy, instead of actually solving problems and cleaning up the mess that he, Gavin Newsom, has made in California. People are sick of it. Well, he's playing political games, so let's end the Trump presidency. What about our lives here in California? What about, I'm going to be this morning doing a press conference in the Palisades. What's he done about that? In January, he promised a Marshall Plan to rebuild the Palisades. Nothing's happened. He can't deal with any of this because he's incapable of actually delivering positive results. I think people are just fed up with politicians like this. That's why next year I'm really confident that actually, in a way, it started tonight, that we in California, at least, we're going to elect an outsider who's just going to come in and take on this corrupt system that right. The Democrats have had their own way for so long and start to actually do practical things to make life better for people.
So
instead
you
of these endless political games you get from Newsom.
So I know you can't study in New Jersey and Virginia and New York City and you got your hands full, but many people think that Jack Cittarelli, they were effectively pinned him to President Trump, who could never win New Jersey and will never win Virginia, and hasn't in three times. So when they just say, when they put Trump in there, Jack Cittarelli suffered. How do you handle the fact that you and Donald Trump agree on so much?
Well, I think that it's going to be all about the issues we have here, right? It's not a national thing. I make this point. Last night, I was on a show with Katie Porter, following her. She and I are basically in all the polling in the top two in the race here in California. She's blaming Trump for everything in California. Gas prices, everything being unaffordable. What a nightmare it is to try and run a small business. None of that's anything to do with Trump. As I pointed out, President Trump is still the president in Tennessee, where gas prices are half what they are in California. He's also the president in places like Texas and Florida, where housing costs are a fraction of what they are. It's Democrats that have caused these problems in California. And I'm telling you, when I'm finished with them in the campaign next year, it will be so clear that we need to change direction in California, because it's California politicians, not President Trump, not any other president, that has actually given us the highest unemployment rate in America, within America, the highest poverty rate in America. The worst business climate. All these things are caused by Democrats. And I'm going to be absolutely clear about that and campaigning strongly on that from today onwards. And honestly, they don't know what's about to hit them, because they've never really faced a candidate like me before, an outsider with business experience, government reform experience, media platform. We're going to take these people apart because they have no record. There's no way. It'll be 16 years next year of one-party rule. Does anyone think on the basis of their record they deserve another four years?
You learn more from losses than you do from victories. It's pretty much tradition, whether it's sports or life. So right now, the Republicans really have very little to be happy about, except for Nassau County, Long Island, Bruce Blakeman's victory, and everybody else on Long Island. A lot of moved out of the city and made that county red. Well, what should you learn? What strategy can you take away from this?
Well, I think that we've got to make the election next year about California, not about national politics. That's a simple point. It's, if it's a referendum, and you see this always in off-year elections, and that's what the people with a bad record don't want to talk about their record. They want to talk about something else. And so here in California, and that's all that I can speak to, because that's my focus, the Democrat candidate, whoever that will be, will obviously want to make the entire election about Trump. And so the lesson is, I've got to get out there early, strong, to make clear that actually it's not about that. It's about the one-party rule that has caused all these problems, and we need to change direction. And so we've got to just campaign hard, raise a lot of money, beat the Democrat machine. These are not easy things to do, but they're not impossible. And that's what I'm committed to, and it starts today.
So right now, Katie Porter's in, and man, she's just going to implode, if not in live, just by looking in her background. How do you feel if Rick Caruso gets in the race?
I think that, well, he's running as a Democrat.
Yep.
I think the problem
But you guys all are together, right? And you take the top two and you go to the finals?
Yeah, but there'll be one Republican in the top two. That'll be me. I'm planning on that, and it's looking like that right now. And there'll be one Democrat. And whoever the Democrat is, they will represent more of the same. And the question is very simple, classic political question. What do you want? More of the same? The highest gas prices, the highest electric bills, the highest taxes, the insane regulations that make it impossible to run a small business? Do you want more of that from the Democrats who've run this place without any check balance for 16 years? Or do you want something new? And I think that that question will be as powerful whoever the candidate is. I'm asked the whole time, what about this person, that person, who do you think you'd rather run against? I don't care, because actually, when people say, how's a Republican going to win in California? My response is, with their record, the worst of any state in America, how is a Democrat going to win? There is no basis for them to ask for another 4 years of one-party rule. And I think once we make those arguments strongly next year, whoever the candidate is will prevail.
All right. Thanks so much, Steve Hilton. Best of luck. Republican California gubernatorial candidate. Looking at now he has the Proposition 50 that just passed. Thanks to Gavin Newsom put it up. And he thinks he now makes himself a front runner for the presidency. Steve Hilton, thank you. So meanwhile, the other big story is what we're doing in Central and South America. I love it. It's long overdue. But the president said, look, I'm going to instruct my people to start briefing Congress more. They've been out. But now he's going to, and it's going to be done today by a guy they respect, Secretary of State Marco Rubio. He's going to be talking about the need to take out Maduro, how we're doing it, and why he's convinced the boats we're blowing up are full of drugs that are going to kill the American people. It could have been coke, might be fentanyl, could be crack. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert like Hunter Biden about it. So the need to do this is clear. And the other thing that we're going to be focusing on is Mexico. Now, there's a belief that we wouldn't do anything to tick off Sheinbaum, who's an ally of the president and is now president of that country. But the cartels are the one making the money off our death and destruction and causing chaos at the border. Daniel Garza, a conservative analyst and former White House staffer, was on Fox and Friends today. Cut 36.
I think the main security risk to America is that the Trump administration has hinted that they have proof that some countries across the Western Hemisphere are not only impotent against cartels or even indifferent to the violence endured by many of the innocent victims, their own citizens, mind you, but politicians in power are complicit with the cartels. And that poses a grave risk to American safety and security, and it cannot be ignored. I think what Marco Rubio is going to deliver today is going to be a sober assessment of the growing threat to Americans and that there needs to be direct action.
I agree. And Garza was direct. And I think that's just got to be explained behind closed doors. But these people are so ideological, dug in. I expect them to come out and say, I didn't really learn anything. And we're not sure who was in those boats. And those boats might have just been fishermen in the middle of nowhere without fishing rods. So expect that. But you got to still do it. If you're the president of the United States, you have to send your Secretary of State, Secretary of War out there to brief people. And behind closed doors, you get a lot less with Intelligence Committee people and Armed Forces Committee. You get a lot less of the politics. They don't worry about looking weak by listening and asking questions as opposed to being on trial, taking a stand and And, you know, with this stuff that we see all the time, the posturing. Hakeem Jeffries is an example of somebody that is just incapable of understanding that this is real and not pure politics. Here's my example. Cut 37.
The Pentagon, the Trump administration, so-called Secretary of Defense, all those folks who are part of the national security apparatus, they failed to provide a shred of evidence to justify the killings that are taking place off the coast of South America. Not a shred of evidence. And we're open to it. And it's congressional responsibility to evaluate that.
That's not true, number one. They've blown up 15 boats, videos all available, 64 dead. And what they're doing is knocking them out before they can move the drugs into these countries, into these island countries. And they're also going to, I think it's great, the Secretary of State is going to bring in the Cuban opposition party. And the head's going to meet one-on-one with Marco Rubio. And he knows the opposition leader is somebody that could bring a lot of peace to that region, because Venezuela was really, the guy in Venezuela was mentored, Hugo Chavez, by Castro. Castro's all over this. Put all these people in power. It's time for us to admit it. We have to take back our hemisphere first.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show. More to know.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
So, I am going to be outnumbered on at the top of the hour. I'm going to change outfits and run down there in 2 minutes. But before we wrap up the show, I wanted to find out, as you could just heard, if there's more to know. And I think the answer is yes. Tom Brady. I thought this was a joke. I thought it was one of those sponsored ads, and this is really true. Tom Brady got his dog cloned from people trying to bring back the woolly mammoth. Evidently, his dog died in 2023, and before her death, he took a little bit of blood, genetic reproduction of the pet, Junie. Colossal Laboratories and biosciences then worked on cloning his dog. So I guess it was made in a Petri dish. And it is now born? Is this true? It's born and living?
Yeah. Now, my question is, would you do that with one of your dogs if you realized?
Sure.
Yeah.
How much is it? I mean, do I have to win 7 Super Bowls in order to do it?
I think that helps. That helps a lot.
So guess what? This same group is trying to bring back the woolly mammoth. It's called De-Extinction. Conceptually, the company's idea behind bringing back the extinct animals is to learn more about what made animals extinct, which is interesting. While the company notes the majority of factors are due to climate change and other man-made disasters to animal inhabitants. I don't know what we did to kill the woolly mammoth, but I'm pretty sure climate change didn't kill him. Next, J.J. Watt missed his former team's Monday Night Football big victory over the Dallas Cowboys, and it's all because, despite being nearly $130 million in his career, he'll be damned if he signs up for yet another streaming service. The retired NFL defensive end issued a rant on X ahead of the Arizona Cardinals primetime road game matchup at AT&T Field. And Watt didn't get them to get to see the Club of America's team because, as all YouTube users say, he could no longer watch ESPN and ABC due to a dispute between Disney and the streaming service. So therefore, he had to resign and cough up even more money for a subscription. Quote, "So we're just not watching Monday Night Football, huh? I'm not buying another streaming subscription. The crazy part is I have some sort of subscription because I watch Espanol and matches on ESPN Plus, but I can't watch Monday Night Football." That's a convoluted way of saying that he's upset there's a dispute. YouTube will work it out. I can't believe this guy will not suck it up.
No, he's just frustrated like a lot of people are. He's like, how many services do you have to buy in order to watch one single sport?
So he's fighting for all the people.
Yes, he's just as frustrated as most people that you need 5 different services to follow football.
Sir David Beckham, knighted by King Charles at Windsor Castle. It's always been a goal of his. Beckham, of course, is one of the most popular names in the sport's history. He was captain of the English national team, a superstar with Manchester United, and suited up for the other clubs like Real Madrid and this other team called the Los Angeles Galaxy. He now owns, or part owner, of the Miami team, who has a forward named Messi. Next, a giant-sized Poochie went missing from her family's Mississippi home after about five years ago, was reunited with her owners after turning up in Florida City, 520 miles away. It's Christy Taylor and Josh Craig said their dog, a Chihuahua, and Dachshund mix named Penny, went missing from their home. They never found out where he went. but wandering through the streets of DeLand 5 years ago, and somehow it turned up and they got him back. I don't know if I believe that.
I mean, there's a lot of these stories. I'm always fascinated. It's not like it was gone for a week, 2 weeks, a month, 5 years, and still alive. I mean, it's fascinating how the dog survived for 5 years just traveling the roads.
Especially, I mean, it's not a rugged dog. You expect it from like a bull mastiff. But if you're a chihuahua mixed with anything, you got small little legs, you don't look like an intimidating figure, you got to think that you probably wouldn't survive. But I guess there are chihuahuas in the wild, perhaps. Maybe they are in the frozen tundra of Africa, and they are in the backwaters of Australia.
To watch out for the woolly mammoths on the loose.
Right. But I blame my right guard aerosol spray. That's what wiped out the woolly mammoth. Hey, guys, I'm going to be outnumbered at the top of the hour, and keep in mind, I'm going to be in Fort Myers on Valentine's Day, briankilmeade.com.